There's growing concern that hatcheries could cause our Northwest fish to lose their wild streak and ability to survive. A laboratory in Idaho hopes to change that. Correspondent Aaron Coons explains.
In the southern Idaho desert, fresh water pours out of canyon walls from an underground aquifer and empties into the Snake River. The water is both fresh and a constant 60 degrees.
We have all these natural springs where all we have to do is divert it from the rock wall using either ditches or some kind of pipes to move it into the raceways where we're rearing fish.
The quality of water makes this the perfect place to raise and study fish. Sean Narum is the lead scientist at the Hagerman Fish Culture Experiment Station. It's operated by the University of Idaho, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the Portland-based Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission. Narum works for the Tribal Commission.
What they're trying to do is reform hatchery practices so that they are having less genetic effects on these natural populations.
Northwest waters are awash with controversy when it comes to wild salmon's ability to survive with hatchery fish in their midst. Decades ago, hatcheries were thought to be the perfect solution to sustaining the iconic runs of salmon and steelhead as river-blocking dams were constructed throughout the Northwest. But by the 1990s, criticism of hatcheries was mounting. To understand the biggest concern about hatchery fish, think back to what you learned in Biology 101. Remember the phrase, survival of the fittest? Salmon and steelhead don't need superior genes to survive in hatcheries. They enjoy regular feedings and protection from predators. Later in life, they can end up mating with wild fish, passing along inferior genetic traits. Nick Gajewski is a staff scientist at the Wild Fish Conservancy in Washington State.
And the concern would be that after several generations of this, there really will be no more true wild fish because they will all at some point have bred with progeny that have been run through the hatchery for one or more generations. And if their fitness, reproductive fitness, drops low enough, then you may have a population that truly can't sustain itself.
Sarah Thompson is with the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission. She thinks researchers will be able to prove critics like Gajewski wrong. The key is finding ways to produce more hatchery fish with the survival traits of wild fish.
And in order to do that, we have to have the best available science to help inform those management decisions. This facility allows us to do that.
Back in southern Idaho's Hagerman Lab, thousands of samples collected by biologists in Idaho, Oregon, and Washington are fed into a machine that looks like a fish tank with robotic arms. Each one is holding syringes containing these bits of fish, scales, fin clippings, and stomach contents. The sophisticated machine is a fast worker, processing up to 1,000 samples at a time by transferring them to vials for testing. From there, the machine determines the lineage of a single fish. It tells the scientists which fish were hatchery raised. It can go back 10 generations to tell which of the fish's ancestors came from hatcheries. If researchers like Narum can pinpoint which hatchery fish are carrying the best genetic traits, they can help hatchery managers become more selective about which of these fish are used to repopulate hatcheries.
We're able to use genetic techniques to evaluate what are the most appropriate stocks, which ones are surviving and reproducing most effectively.
Nick Gajewski with the Wild Fish Conservancy isn't convinced that scientists can build a better hatchery fish. A federal scientific review panel spent nearly a decade researching 178 hatcheries in the Northwest. It made recommendations in 2009.
There's always some more research that could be done, but we need to put into practice the solid research-based recommendations.
The panel's recommendation that Gajewski would most like to see followed limits on the number of fish raised in hatcheries and released into the wild. When it comes to the value of fish hatcheries, the tribes differ from non-tribal fish advocates in this way. The return of robust salmon runs isn't merely an ecological goal they can wait on for decades. Salmon and steelhead represent a sacred first food. They are a primary source of nutrition as well as a treaty-guaranteed right. Sarah Thompson with the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission says the tribes can't simply sit by and wait for nature to run its course.
It's not about preserving what salmon populations we have left. The tribes want to rebuild abundant salmon populations.
Eventually, more hatchery fish that can pass on the genetic traits to evade predators and compete for food will lead to stronger runs of fish. That means less dependence on hatcheries. And that's something both hatchery critics and tribes would like to see happen. In Boise, I'm Aaron Coons.